The Labor Industry Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Mr. Petrie, please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Zhang, present. Representative Detmer.
Present.
Representative Detmer, present. Representative McDonald. Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Berg, present. Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Bliss, present. Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Edelson, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Frederick, present. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Greenman, present. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Nelson, present. Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Poston, present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Raleigh, present. Representative Sundin.
Present.
Representative Sundin, present. And Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
You're muted, Ron. Only 3 years, you'd think we'd catch on sometime, but anyway, a quorum is present. Members, we have new staff to introduce. First, our committee legislative assistant, just called the roll, Kevin Petrie. Also, we have a temporarily assigned committee administrator, Nick Stumel-Longer. I hope I got that last name right, Nick, but you guys all know I butcher names as we go anyway. And Nick will be working with Travis Reese for the month of February, learning the role, and then following March 4th, Travis will be going on paternity leave for the remainder of session, and Nick will be filling in as the committee administrator. Welcome both of you. We have a fun committee, as people saw on Monday, so I'm looking forward to the session. Members, we have two sets of minutes today. The first is from April 7th, 2021, and I'm seeking a motion to approve those minutes.
So move, Chair.
A move by Representative Edelson. Thank you.
Chair, this is Representative Raleigh.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Chair. We had an update just a few moments ago for the 131 minutes. And I believe that there is a typo still at the end of it, the word adjourned, Mr. Chair.
Representative Raleigh, we will be getting to those minutes in just a minute.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood, Chair. Thank
that's
you.
That's okay. Committee Administrator Reese had sent out a correction on those minutes, and people might not have seen them in their inbox. But anyway, so we'll move the any other questions on the April 7th, 2021 minutes? All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Next up is the minutes from the 131. 2022 from just on Monday, and Committee Minister Reese sent out a correction. Was that the typo correction?
No, that was a different one. So it was a team effort that we missed the first one. We got it changed, and now another team effort that I'm also going to rope in Mr. John Holtquist on, that we missed the this typo that Representative Raleigh pointed out. So so noted, and Kevin can make the adjustment in the minutes for the next typo that you pointed out there, right, Representative Raleigh?
So could I have a motion to approve the 131-2022 minutes with the corrections noted?
I would make that motion, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poston. There is a motion. Any other questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, members. Members, today we have three sets of presentations from the departments in this committee's jurisdiction. We will start with the Minnesota National Guard, Department of Military Affairs, and then we will hear from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and then the Department of Labor and Industry. First, the Minnesota National Guard. Welcome, Major General Sean Mankey, Adjutant General, and Don Kerr, Executive Director. I'm not sure who wants to take this, but I'll go to Mr. Kerr first. Please identify yourself.
Hey, Mr. Chair, we do have the privilege of having the Adjutant General with us today. I am Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and my job is to drive slides for him and be seen wearing my suit by my boss, and otherwise we'll turn it over to him.
General Mankey, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Eklund, I'm Major General Sean Mankey, the Adjutant General of the State of Minnesota. Thank you for having me here today. Are we ready to begin?
You can proceed, General. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm Major General Sean Mankey, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, and I'm humbled and honored to be here today representing the soldiers and airmen that make up our great organization. Next slide, please. When I became the Adjutant General, I directed the staff to develop a campaign plan to move the organization forward with the ultimate goal of better serving our communities, state, and nation. This past October, I'm happy to say Operation North Star published and became the National Guard's campaign plan. The three pillars focus on people, modernization, and partnerships. And it's all tied together with communication to ensure our priorities are communicated to our internal and external audiences. Additionally, this plan aligns with areas of the One Minnesota plan to ensure we're assisting in the mission, improving the lives of all Minnesotans, to include our Guard members. Next slide, please. People are paramount to our success, and perhaps the most significant reason your Guard is recognized as a premier organization. Investment in Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen and civilian employees will give the organization the means to tackle the state's and national and nation's challenges that we face, promoting the actual value of choosing to be a soldier, an airman, or a citizen civilian employee. We focus this priority in two areas, or what we call lines of effort. One is enabling people, and the other enabling units. Enabling people focuses on the training and resources the organization provides or coordinates to ensure our soldiers, airmen, and civilians can complete their assigned missions, allowing for continuous personal and professional development. We enable units by leveraging retention incentives to retain qualified people and properly equipping units to fulfill their state and federal missions. We continue to focus on diversity and inclusion, and we've made significant strides in this area. I'm happy to say since 2011, we've increased the number of females serving in the Minnesota National Guard from 16.2% of our service members to well over 20%. Command Chief Master Sergeant Lisa Erickson assumed responsibilities as the 14th State Command Chief of the Minnesota Air National Guard in October. She is the first female to hold this position. In 2010, Black, Asian, American, Indian, and Hispanic service members comprised our formations at 7.4%. At 2021's year's end, we were at 18.6% in this demographic. Our goal is to be a reflection of the community that we serve in and we work in. Next slide, please. Modernization. Army Chief of Staff General James McConville said last year, we must transform quickly so we have continued overmatch against those who wish to harm and those who threaten our national security. Modernization ensures we have the right forces, infrastructure, training spaces, and systems to combat threats to our national security. In fiscal year 2021, the National Defense Authorization Act contained language that reduced the Air Force C-130 total aircraft inventory. We engage with our congressional members to gain and maintain support for advocating the retention and modernization of our C-130 tactical airlift wing at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. We will continue to fight for our C-130s as the Air Force moves forward with their reduction plan, focusing on modernization and relevance for the state and the federal mission. We must have composition parity with our active duty counterparts, as this ensures our ability to integrate and support our state and national mission. Next slide, please. Our economic impact to the state of Minnesota is vast. The Minnesota National Guard had direct state expenditures of $62 million using funds appropriated by the Minnesota legislature. Thank you. Through cooperative agreements with the National Guard Bureau, the Department of Military Affairs was able to leverage another $78 million in federally reimbursed state expenditures. The federal government also invested $449 million in direct federal spending within the state of Minnesota. Next slide. Our partners include those we serve, employers, and state and federal agencies in countries which we share the United States goal of global security. Partnerships allow us to improve our service in our communities, state, and nation through their direct and indirect support. In 2021, we celebrated our 25th year anniversary with our longtime state partner, Croatia. This partnership has contributed to the security cooperation objectives of the United States by building partner capacity, improving interoperability, enhancing U.S. access influence while increasing the readiness of U.S. and partner forces to meet emerging challenges. Due to the pandemic, we canceled our annual exchange last year with Norway. We are monitoring the COVID environment, and so far this year's exchange is still taking place in late March. In 2023, we will celebrate the partnership of 50 years, and the planning is underway for that anniversary. Working with partners such as Homeland Security and Emergency Management, the FBI, Minnesota State Patrol, Minnesota Department of Health, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and the American Red Cross, these are all examples of combining efforts to support civil authorities during civil unrest or combating COVID-19. All Minnesota National Guard partners are key to our ability to accomplish our mission and enhance our ability to do what we need to do. Next slide, please. Same as 2020, 2021 demanded more from our service members in previous years. From March 2020 until September 2021, the Guard supported the state's health emergency plan with community-based testing, vaccinations, and support at long-term care facilities and transitional care units. We had a brief reprieve until October. However, since then, we have supported community-based testing sites and have tested more than 152,000 citizens in the state of Minnesota. With our partners, we train more than 400 service members as certified and temporary nursing assistants to support more than 30 long-term care facilities. Currently, more than 600 National Guard women and men are supporting this COVID-19 mission in a federal 502F status. Next slide, please. 2021, we have also been busy with civil unrest. Nearly 750 service members provided security at our nation's capital during the presidential inauguration last year. Our organic 133rd Airlift Wing transported more than 90% of the service members to and from the National Capital Region. In preparation for the Derek Chauvin and Potter trials, the Guard worked with multiple state agencies to support civil authorities to protect lives, preserve property, ensure people's rights to protest peacefully are maintained. Next slide. In addition to this, in August of 2021, Army Aviation supported both aerial fire suppression and medical evacuation efforts in Spokane, Washington through the EMAC process. During the same time frame, both our Air and Army Guard were activated to assist in the aerial fire suppression missions in northern Minnesota. Next slide. We've done all this while continuing to do our federal mission. As of today, there's nearly 300 soldiers and airmen deployed across the Middle East, with smaller groups of airmen stationed in Africa and European countries. Additionally, we have an airman supporting Operation Allies Welcome at locations in the U.S. Most recently and ongoing is the return of Task Force 10194, who will complete their return to Minnesota in the next couple weeks. Next slide. The 148th Fire Wing concluded 2021 with two major training exercises, one overseas deployment, four state active duty missions, and 25 patriotic flyovers. The 148th Fighter Wing's top accomplishment this year was its performance during an inspection where they were received a superior performer in multiple team and individual categories, a milestone event for them. Next slide, please. On January 17, 2021, the 133rd Airlift Wing celebrated their 100th anniversary. A century ago, they became the first federally recognized Air National Guard unit in the nation. Their origins are traced back to the founding unit, the 109th Observation Squadron, known today as the 109th Airlift Squadron. Additionally, they participated in three major training exercises in 2021. In April of 2021, more than 700 soldiers from two of the 135 returned to Minnesota after an 11-month deployment in Djibouti. While deployed, the battalion's mission was to provide force protection through security forces in the region of Djibouti, Somalia, and Kenya. In June of 2021, nearly 150 soldiers from the 34th Military Police Company headquartered in Stillwater returned to Minnesota after a 9-month deployment to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The soldiers provided base security and support of Joint Task Force Guantanamo, whose mission is to conduct safe, humane, and legal detention operations. While deployed, the 34th MP Company was awarded the Major General Harry H. Vanholtz Award the second year in a row. This award recognizes the top military police units in the United States Army. Sixty soldiers from Bravo Company based in St. Cloud returned last month from a deployment to Kuwait and Iraq. While deployed, the aviation unit provided aerial movement of troop supplies and equipment utilizing their CH-47F helicopters. Task Force 11194 mobilized in March of 2021 to serve the United States Central Command Regional Response Force based at Cat Bearing, Kuwait. While deployed, soldiers participated in the largest U.S. ground exercise with the Egyptian military, the first ever trilateral exercise between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait Land Forces, and U.S. forces. They conducted operations in Syria, guarded key regional U.S. infrastructure, and participated in the withdrawal of Afghanistan. As mentioned earlier, the task force is in the final stage of stages of returning back to Minnesota. In 2021, the Minnesota legislature funded the agency at the highest level the governor requested and recommended. It passed one of two agency initiatives, a bill that clarifies the adjutant general selection process, the second bill, which updates and clarifies aspects of the Minnesota Code of Military Justice, cleared the House, and we're going to work to get it cleared through the Senate in this upcoming session. One additional measure the agency supported passed, a bill that authorized the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to investigate allegations of sexual harassment and assault between members of the Minnesota National Guard. This legislation is an important measure to improve the speed at which allegations of this nature can be investigated and resolved. And while in the early stages, this initiative and law will help us have greater speed to justice for our service members. As you have heard, we have a tremendous team of professionals dedicated to serving our communities, state, and nation, women and men who are always ready and always there. Thank you for supporting the Minnesota National Guard. I myself and Mr. Kerr will stand by ready for any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, General Menke. Any questions for Minnesota National Guard from members? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and General. In terms of your partnerships, I was at the Disabled Vets Camp one weekend when, which is in my district, when I think it was Croatia came in for a visit. And do you plan on any other exchanges like that in the future, sir?
General.
We have multiple exchanges planned throughout 2022. Croatia is fielding UH-60 Mike Blackhawk helicopters, the same versions that we have here. So we will be participating in that and offering subject matter assistance through our service members to their service members, as well as recently Croatia made the decision to field the Bradley fighting vehicles, which is the same vehicles that our 1st Armored Brigade combat team has. So we're looking forward to the opportunities that we continue to grow the partnership with those two platforms, as well as, we have 4 Croatian soldiers coming over to compete in the biathlon that is scheduled up at Camp Ripley in the next couple of weeks. So we continue to engage with the Croatian community literally multiple times throughout the year, Representative Detmer.
Follow up, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And General Menke, just keep in mind that the Disabled Vets Camp is always there to greet any of the partnerships that you might bring into the state of Minnesota. I know last time they had a great time there. And one other question, General, is I really support the support that we're getting for the Starbase program that we have in Duluth. We've expanded in Duluth and also the one in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm on the board of directors there, and the people there just really appreciate the support they're getting from the National and Air National Guard. Thank you.
General Mackey.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate it. It is truly a great program for our youth. And I know the instructors thoroughly enjoy it, and it's always a good thing to see it, just the STEM program taking off. So thank you for the comment.
Thank you.
Any other member questions? Well, General and Mr. Kerr, I want to thank you both for being here at the committee. I also want to extend my thanks to you and the National Guard for what the heroics that they performed in helping the state of Minnesota out with this COVID response, all the while doing your normal movements of troops and obligations overseas and all that. It's truly commendable. And I just want to comment. I went to the National Guard COVID testing site in International Falls, and small town folks aren't necessarily used to how the military does things. And, you know, when you have something at the Union Hall, it's usually a social event where you can stand around and chat and all that kind of stuff. And your troops didn't allow that to happen. They got moved through the testing clinic rather quickly. And I think there were some surprised people when they found themselves going out the back door as the tests were done. But anyway, General, my heartfelt thanks to you and to all the National Guard for the tremendous work they've done supporting the state of Minnesota this past couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Quick one. I know this is probably for Mr. Kerr also and the General. It's probably a good time to start talking about our trip back up to Camp Ripley as a committee. So we've been up there twice, and I think we're due for a C-130, I think. So anyway, just a comment. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Kerr will take that down, Representative, and we'll get him working on it. Tick, tick.
And just to comment on that, General, is I've flown both C-130s and the helicopters. If we do that, I'd much rather fly in a helicopter up there, but that's just the Chair's personal preference.
Acknowledged, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right, next, thank you, General and Mr. Kerr for that presentation. Next is Department of Veterans Affairs, Commissioner Herkey. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, committee and Chair Eklund. Commissioner Larry Herkey, Minnesota Department, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and today per the request of the committee, our focus is on veteran suicide prevention program will be the main focus of what we're going to cover today. And we get the next slide, Ben. Just a reminder of the agency profile or overview. Our mission is to serve veterans, their dependents, and survivors. We do that by connecting them with federal and state care and benefits that they've earned. Today, we are operating 5 veterans homes, and we assist over 304,000 veterans and their dependents in securing both benefits and services, again, that they have earned as further service to their nation. Next slide. Today, I usually brief by myself many times, but today I decided, since the focus is on veterans suicide prevention, that I would give you some access to the team. So I'll be asking for you to recognize these individuals as we move forward. Today I have with me Paula Nowinski, who is my healthcare division quality director. She was my front lead and runner for the last year in this area. I also have Christy Charles, who's the fairly new veteran suicide prevention coordinator. And lastly, we just recently brought on is Krista Stanatis, who is the Veteran Suicide Prevention Liaison. Next slide. Our problem statement, which actually ends up being our goal too, is how do we reduce veteran suicide by 20% no later than 2025? And then ultimately, we want to end all veteran suicide by 2035. The national strategy and public health indicates that suicide is preventable. I think we all believe that. I think with focus on this area, we can achieve both items, the 2025 goal of reduction and the 2035 goal of elimination. Next slide. I personally believe, and you'll find this in a lot of the writings, but this is I think one out, and many times over I've seen it in society. If we can provide veterans with a sense of purpose, and if we can connect them with other people, and other people can be anyone in society, but if we can connect them with other veterans, that's even better yet. Seems like those those connections last longer than anything else. But I think if we can do these two things, we are going to be successful overall. So much of our plan that we're putting together, and I did want to tell the committee that we are developing a plan like we did for veterans homelessness. We have a plan called Every Veteran Deserves a Home, and we've been executing that over since the plan was written in 2020. So we've been executing elements of that, almost all of it really, here. And we plan to do the same thing here with the veteran suicide prevention. That plan, once we have it, we can give a more detailed overview of that at a later time. Next slide. Wanted to give you some statistics and update. I know since Chair Eklund saw this, I think the last time I briefed you, Chair, we had data through 2018. So we received 2019 data and 2020. As you can see clearly, the state, which is the first column, the numbers have been generally going downward. We had a really good year for the state at 723. Veteran suicides have remained pretty consistent, a little bit of downward trending overall. The percentage of veteran suicides versus the rest of society is we're at 13.8% of all suicides in Minnesota. And just as a reminder, veterans represent about 6% of the veterans in Minnesota itself. So that's much higher than I think any other category of individuals. So it's still an issue for Minnesota, and it's something that we need to focus on going forward. Next slide. We know that veteran suicide is underreported in Minnesota. We had a study done where they compared the Minnesota Department of Health data against the Department of Defense information for all suicides in Minnesota for the years 2014 through 2019. Dr. Carl Hammer did this from the University of Alabama. He was given access to both sets of databases, and what we found is we believe that our underreporting is by about 20%. So if you look at 2020 to the right here, you'll see that there were 723 Minnesota suicides. Reported was 100 veteran suicides, but in actuality, the number is probably closer to 120. You ask, how can that be? I think a lot of it is due to the fact of not every time is the undertaker or the people that are helping report some of these deaths is that actually coming to the forefront. So that's going to be part of our instruction that we do and so forth, is to try to get a closer estimation on the number of veterans actually dying by suicide in Minnesota. But right now, from everything we can see, and again, this was a name-by-name analysis of the entire group, there was an underreporting or a delta of about 20%. Next slide. And Minnesota preventable deaths, these are not just veterans death, but overall, the good news for the state of Minnesota is suicide is downward trending. You can see the blue line, which indicates a significant reduction going in the right direction anyway as a start in 2020. But one thing we want to be on the watch for is the alcohol attributable and the drug overdose deaths continue to rise. So this will be also part of our plan to ensure that the veterans in those categories are addressed and that we have a proper attention to those veterans. Mr. Chair, as Ben goes to the next slide, I'd like you, if you could recognize Christy Charles, she'll continue the brief for us.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And Ms. Charles, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. My name is Christy Charles. I'm the Veteran Suicide Prevention Coordinator in MDVA. I also just want to mention that I have a disabled veteran brother who has lived with me for many years, so I have a passion for this subject and my role. In agency collaboration, we have been and continue to work with many state partners and community partners. We recognize MDH as being legislatively tasked with suicide prevention, and so we've been coordinating with them and working with them very closely, and certainly with our, the myself and our new liaison on board to really solidify and see how we fit together. We've been working together on many initiatives, including the Governor Challenge. And we also work very closely with the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. So for the sake of time, I'm going to ask you to look at the slide, please. You can see I will touch on some of the, we'll be touching on some of the other initiatives that we're doing with these stakeholders. We're working closely with the Minnesota National Guard and Reserves and the Department of Agriculture. All of these partners have been part of the Governor Challenge and are looking forward to working with us in the future. The Vision 23, we've been working really closely with the CEPC's Community Engagement Outreach and Coordinators to with the coalitions all over the state of Minnesota. We have a lot of exciting things that we're doing with them. So there's lots of action happening within these partners. It's not just meetings or saying that we're a partnership. So that's really exciting to me. Previous to this role, I was worked for the Minnesota National Guard as a contractor in a similar role. So I'm very excited to be continuing to work with all of these partners. NAMI Minnesota, we've been working very closely with them to provide education. The Minnesota Ambulance Association, Regents Hospital with their Hero Care program to connect with non-VA healthcare systems who connect our veterans to their services, their earned services, and really an upstream approach to suicide prevention. CentraCare Healthcare, we collaborated and partnered and did an event. So I'll be talking a little bit more about a couple of these things. Nystrom and Associates and Methodist Hospital, we've been working with their social workers to provide toolkits and access to providing their connecting to LinkVet and their VA services. Next slide, please. So as part of really that's come out of the Governor Challenge and with the funding that we've been provided, we've been able to hire the two positions, myself and Krista, our new liaison. And we've been offering with our partnership with SAMHSA and the Governor Challenge free psych armor trainings. We started with 10 and now we're up to 15. And those trainings are really being spread through the coalitions and our different partner agencies to reach employers, social workers, and all different people in our communities that lives touch veterans. So these trainings would include, there's a training that's called 15 Things a Veteran Wants You to Know. There's things specific to women veterans. There's 15 different trainings. There's SAVE training is one of the links also. So we're really excited to have that being spread out through our communities and with all throughout the state. So in 2022, we will have the largest number of certified psychological autopsy investigators in the United States. This is something we're very excited about. We're partnering very closely with the state in this initiative, and we will be reviewing the deaths of our veterans since 2019 going forward to provide and give us some information and trends and to bring closure and honor to our veteran and use that life to save others. In addition, we had a goal with our priority group three of our Governor Challenge that's lethal means focused to distribute. Originally, it was 911 gun locks, and so we knocked that out of the park with 15,000 gun locks being distributed again with a collaboration between the VA, CVSOs, beyond, building healthy military communities, reserve bases, and the Minnesota National Guard. So we continue that effort, and we're kind of expanding on some of our efforts in that area. So 52 community partners received CALM training, that's Council on Access to Lethal Means Safety. That was done through our partnership with NAMI, and we hope to, and really, I believe that number is a little higher than that, so we'll be happy to have that continue. In addition, and I'll talk a little bit more about this on the next slide, but we've trained 128 MDVA staff, LinkVet staff, DEED staff, and are some of our other stakeholders in mental health first aid training. So 724 social media views were for, on my fourth day on the job, we had an event up in St. Cloud with Mayor Dave Kleist with the Suicide Prevention, Veteran Suicide Prevention Awareness Day. It was a very moving event, and it was just, it was very powerful and great to see Mayor Kleist. If you have a chance to look at that Facebook page, he shared the story of his brother, and it was very, very moving. So we are also in July of this year, we'll be part of the 988 rollout, which we're really excited about. We've been a collaborating partner on that. And then in addition, we have hired, we're working with RA Marketing to come up with some PSAs, TV and radio commercials focused on lethal means and connecting our veterans throughout the state with Link Vets. So that's coming soon, that's in the works. And in addition to that, which is not mentioned on the slide, is a video partnership. We're collaborating with the National Guard with a longer length video for safety. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you have regarding these efforts or our partners on the previous slide at the end of our presentation. And next slide, please, Ben. Thank you. So one of our focused initiatives since May of 2021 has been the mental health first aid training. We have hired a contractor who has been training every month through December. Now I'm certified and I will be taking that over. We've been able to really work with our partners and offer this. We found that there's availability and a need and a value to providing this to our community partners whose lives touch veterans. So this is really an upstream approach, mental health first aid, giving people responses and language to when they're meeting someone who might be struggling and having crisis. So there's a big value to this upstream approach as a means to ending suicide in our state. So we will continue to be doing that the fourth Wednesday of every month. And we're right now doing it virtually, and we will offer supplemental as needed. So with that, I'm going to pass over to our liaison, Kristen Stanatis, and she will be talking about the Veteran Crisis Line. Thank you, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Ms. Charles. Ms. Stanatis, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eklund and the committee. Thank you for having us here today to speak on our veteran suicide prevention efforts. My name is Krista Stananis, and I'm a Veteran Suicide Prevention Liaison for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm fairly new here. I've been with MDVA for approximately 1 month, but I myself am a military veteran that served and deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom and have many ties to the veteran community on a personal level and now on a professional level since joining this agency. So I'm talking here about the Veterans Crisis Line. It's a free and confidential resource available 24/7. The purpose of it is to connect veterans to a professional person that has been trained in crisis assistance. Increasing awareness that this service is available saves lives. It's available to all veterans, even if they're not enrolled in VA healthcare services or registered with the VA. This line is a large provider of crisis call, text, and chat services, and we have pulled the numbers here specific to Minnesota. So this slide here shows us our tracking efforts for calls made to the line from Minnesota area code phone numbers from July through December of 2021. So we pulled the information on the consult calls, which is where a veteran is connected to a trained professional to assist them in their mental health crisis situation. And then here we also have the number of emergency dispatches to the caller that was in crisis. As you can see, we have 923 consults for that six-month time period and 215 emergency dispatches. And this concludes my portion of our presentation. As we go into the next slide, Paula Nowinski will be speaking next. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stananis. Ms. Nowinski, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. My name is Paula Nowinski. I'm a registered nurse. I work for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs as the Healthcare Division Quality Director. I've been with the MDVA Suicide Prevention Program for just over 2 years. really started this initiative right before the COVID pandemic. And so we have made small steps forward despite the pandemic and all the things that have been happening. I thank the chair and the legislative group for providing us funding to be able to put this important work forward. As you can see, we have numerous dollars allocated to various parts of our program payroll. We have some professional and technical contracts that are needed to assist in our veteran death reviews, that process to review every veteran that dies by suicide so that we can start finding very specific themes to our veterans, determine if they've been connected with MDVA, with the VA, and be really looking for actions that we can take that are specific to our Minnesota veterans that have been dying by suicide. We have a significant budget for training, not only our MDVA employees and our suicide prevention team, but also doing outreach training. And as Christy spoke of, to many of those mental health first aid classes that we're doing. We did put significant amount of money also in a marketing budget. We feel that we not only need to be reaching our veterans through the traditional veteran networks, but we also need to break into some mainstream media and radio to be able to grab our veterans, but also their family members that might be listening and could advocate on their behalf. So some money for that. So that is the dollars as we've allocated, and we are working on spending those and look forward to having some more visual and be a little bit more present for the state of Minnesota with that. In MDVA, there's also a significant amount of money that is going through our Support Our Troop grants. Those are going to some very upstream approaches to really support veterans in crisis and also prevent crisis by some of those upstream public health report approaches. So money has been going to the DAV, to Battle Buddies, Every Third Saturday, Lutheran Social Services, and the Corps Contract, 23rd Veterans. And so all of these smaller companies and groups are able to write for those grants and be able to get some of the funding to help with some of those upstream approaches. The legislature also granted a significant amount of money to the Veterans Resilience Project, and that agency is working on some training and increasing the therapy providers that are able to do some EMDR or eye movement desensitization reprocessing treatment, which is a very good therapy for some veterans in regards to PTSD. So we're working very closely with them to provide some parameters and some monitoring and tracking for the results of that work. Go ahead, next slide, please. Some potential future program enhancements that could be coming, and these would be results based on our veteran death reviews to further really guide the opportunities. But we see a best practice with Regents Hospital, where they have a grant-funded hero care program, a social worker dedicated to helping identify any veterans or service members or their families as they come into Regents Hospital. And that social worker specializes in understanding veterans' benefits. That is a social worker that is also a veteran themselves. We would love to be able to replicate this program, and there's a great deal of interest with some of our other non-VA health partners out in the communities that are interested in doing it and just don't have the funding to be able to do that. We would also really like to expand the marketing and the public health campaigns that we've been talking about, really increase the public presence for our messaging in regards to suicide prevention and upstream approaches. There are some options out there that other states have been using. For example, Wisconsin and Colorado have some safe storage for firearms for veterans, specifically when they might be having some sort of crisis. Not talking about taking guns away permanently, but just an option for safe storage in a temporary setting. Next slide, please. We wanted to give kind of some timelines and some goals that we have for this upcoming year now that we are fully staffed and funded with the program. So in January, we have now rolled out monthly mental health first aid classes for any stakeholders for veterans. And we are working on advertising and getting all of those up and running and rolling. We have provided those services to LinkVet staff, to DEED staff, and other veteran stakeholders in the community. February. We start now following up with any LinkVet calls that ended with the LinkVet staff feeling that the veteran could have been in crisis. So we are going to be looping up with them and making sure that that follow-up has actually happened and that that person does not fall through the cracks. Gun safety and LinkVet airtime commercials are slotted to be going in March. So you'll be looking and seeing those on some airtime. And then the spring brings about the re-engagement with our governor's challenge partners, Mental Health Awareness Month, the 988 rollout. And then as we go into the fall, we have National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And then, of course, October is our Minnesota Veteran Suicide Prevention and Awareness Day event. We have a location to be determined. If anyone has an area that has a wonderful veteran memorial and a community that would like to host that, we are always looking for a place to have that. St. Cloud was a wonderful location this last fall, and we'd be happy to host that again someplace throughout the state. November, we're hoping to launch some more of those pilot the Hero Care program, as Regents Hospital has been doing. Many people are just on the cusp of that, but really looking for some funding to be able to sponsor and host that FTE to have that social worker do that. And December, we're the preliminary results for our veteran suicide death investigations or veteran death reviews. We're hoping to have those compiled and then be able to come forward with some other themes and ideas as we look and really truly find out the commonalities between our veterans that are dying by suicide. Thank you, Chair Eklund. I would welcome any questions at the end, but I will hand it on back over to Commissioner Herkey.
Thank you, Ms. Nowinski. Commissioner Herkey, any other comments or?
Just want to indicate that, as you can see, we've been busy with this. We've got the staff on. I think we've made the connections now with a lot of the stakeholders, and we've integrated our future plans with the other state agencies. Really now is starting to execute and move outside and to get a lot of the things that are going to eventually be in our long-term plan to get them started. And I'm really excited about the things you saw on sort of that timeline, the way ahead kind of slide. But at this point, Mr. Chair, just stand for any questions that the committee might have.
All right, Commissioner, thank you. First up is Representative Edelston.
Thank you, Chair. I want to go back to the veteran crisis line. I was looking, and the numbers are, let's see, was it 900? Got it. Okay. So I guess what I want to know is, when you're collecting this data for the crisis line, are you getting the nature of the crisis? Like, is it, are you finding out, is it a housing issue? Are you finding out if it is mental health at that point? Like, is it, Are you keeping track of this data? Because what I'm wondering is in terms of prevention, if you can look at the crisis, like the immediate crisis, right? All crisis line, like I'm a therapist, like we always, like the crisis happens, like in my office when you have somebody with suicide ideation, you're like, okay, well, what happens before this? So I guess I'm wondering, are you tracking the nature of the crisis so that we have more information if we can do more prevention ahead of time?
And I don't know which staff member wants to answer that, Ms. Nowinski or Ms. Charles, but whichever one, or Commissioner.
We'll let Paula and Ms. Nowinski.
Ms. Nowinski, please.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. The data that is reported through the Veteran Crisis Line is actually compiled through the VA. So we receive that information through our federal partners over at the VA healthcare system. And so at this point, we don't have access to be able to break it down to what was coming before that. We're starting on a small scale with our working with our 188 LinkVet staff starting this month and reviewing the calls that they are identifying as crisis and working to follow up on those. We'll start with that and then continue to work with our federal partners further to be looking at what is constituting a crisis on those once we really have a better handle just through our own LinkVet staff. Thank you.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, that's helpful. So I guess once you find out that information, I think it's good. And I'm curious if you're doing any follow-up after that crisis call.
Ms. Nowinski.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. We will see what the data kind of brings at this point. This is newer information to us, and so we'll continue to work with it and be tracking what those crisis calls are through the LinkVet and then doing follow-up specific related to what that crisis was.
Representative Adelson.
That's great. I think it's just so important to have an action plan for somebody that's having a crisis, so which is oftentimes what's done when you're in a clinic. So I'm hoping to see maybe more information on that. Thank you.
And members, before I go to the next question, is the Veterans Crisis Line number is in the fact sheet that was provided in today's meeting materials. If you want to use that in your social media outreach or your e-update outreach, the further we can get that number out to our constituents, I think the better off we'll be. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe a question for the commissioner. I know on your calendar, you did indicate October as being the special event for the Suicide Awareness Day. And I do have a good site for you if you're looking for a good site. That would be the Disabled Veterans Camp on Big Marine Lake. And you might want to contact them and see if you can set something up. It's a beautiful facility there, and it might be a great place to have that event. So thank you.
Commissioner Herkey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, thank you for nominating the Veterans Camp as a location, and we will definitely look into that. What I've told the staff is that we're going to move it around Minnesota. And the first one was in the St. Paul area, and then we've went to St. Cloud. So that would be great. We'll thank you very much for nominating that location, and we'll be in contact with them.
Thank you,
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is a little bit more on the data side of it. So there's a goal of 20% reduction in veteran suicides by 2025. Could I dig in a little bit more to that number to find out, with the number of veterans that are coming onto the rolls in Minnesota, and as that, I'm sorry, I'll ask it a different way. As we're gaining veterans because of their, you know, ETSing and finishing up their service, what are we projecting as far as the increase or decrease in the number of veterans by 2025 compared to the 20% reduction by 2025? And I know that's a wonky number question, but wondering if you have those.
Which data person wants to try to answer Representative Raleigh's question?
I'll try to take it, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Herkey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, I think the intent was, you know, at the time the goal was set was even before we knew that there was a challenge with reporting, but we're going to take the actual number. So there's 120 was the number I think I quoted for what we believe for 2020. So we would be looking at, you know, over 20 reduction as far as the number of veterans. We think we can do better than that because we think a lot of this information that's going to come out through the PSAs, we've put a huge amount, as you can see, in the lethal means. That's been our area that we're going after. And I think we're going to create the time and space to be able to reduce a significant amount of veteran suicides fairly quickly here, just as soon as we can get that out. Some of the things that are going to take a little longer are some of the training of different people. Like I said, we had to train down to the pizza man, the pizza delivery man, the person running the front desk at the hotel in town. And, you know, we got to get to that point. That's going to take a little longer. But I think we got a lot of things going right now. And, again, probably between 25, 30 veterans would be the minimal that we'd want to reduce that. So we're getting well below 100. Okay. By 2025, and then elimination, and probably a more definite plan on that once we get our full plan put in place. But that's my intent going forward.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment, if I could, please. The focus on our veterans is something that I commend everyone on this call and all the testifiers for. I spent 8 years active duty. I was an infantryman, and then after that, I served in other capacities. And after I left my time in service, I spent some quality time in the VA, we'll put it that way, both on the physical side of therapy and then also on the mental health side of things. And for the public that's listening to this, you know, one of our jobs as, you know, public officials is to make our causes as public as we can. If there are veterans, my sisters and brothers who served in uniform, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're questioning whether or not to call, you know, a suicide hotline or to reach out for help, it is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. We all signed up to serve our country. We all honorably served our country, and it is an honor that the VA gives to us to be able to have these types of services. So if you're considering taking that or making that phone call, please do it. And any one of us that are on this committee, if you want to reach out to us as your state representatives or as, you know, the veteran service officers or any of the other people that are in the VA, reach out to us. I'll take your phone call anytime. We can get through this together. And it's never too late to reach out and get the help that you need. It's so important. You know, you gave so much to our country and to our state. We need to give back in the same manner. And this is incredibly important that we continue this work and make sure that we've got the resources that our veterans need. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to talk like that.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. I don't see any other members' questions. I have one quick question, and I think it'd been Ms. Charles, maybe I'll answer this, but your slide that had all your partners on that you're working with was really impressive. I got to tell you, you've done your homework, done the background. I appreciate that. I'm a rural Minnesota guy. VSOs are the backbone of rural Minnesota veterans affairs and help, and just having a cup of coffee and be able to talk. How active are our rural veteran service officers in this effort?
Thank you, Chair Eklund. Are you're asking to confirm, you're asking about the rural?
Well, maybe all of them, but I guess I need to know what kind of rural focus there is overall, because I mean, a lot of those agencies are down in the area, and you know, I'm a northern Minnesota guy, so I want to make sure that I'm not being critical at all, but I just want to make sure all parts of the states are being reached on this.
Yes, sir. I agree with you that I know in my work previously with the National Guard, that has been definitely an area of focus, the northern regions of our state where resources and behavioral health is a little more sparse. So in answer to that, I mean, we are partnering with all of our, you know, with the CVSOs and through the coalitions. Part of our role, or I know my role starting here, is to connecting them to their coalitions. We just met this week with a VSO, and our legal affairs department to talk about, and this was more in the Mankato area, but it was initiated in the last couple of weeks. And so we connected that conversation into our coalition as an example to say, let's talk about gun storage service offerings that VSO came to us with and wanted to implement because it's being done in Wisconsin. And so, you know, just making those connections with everyone and keeping everyone engaged with one another, capitalizing on our areas, our different unique geographic agricultural areas is really important. So I think that is definitely, we're definitely tracking the need for that and the importance for that. Also, I would just say that I know working with on the Minnesota Suicide Task Force, the Department of Agriculture is also part of our governor challenge, and they have really initiated doing awareness trainings in communities after losing, you know, our farmers and having farmers, veteran farmers, struggle with mental crisis. So I know Safe Talk is one of the trainings that's been done, and our mental health first aid that we're using has also been done in some of those more rural communities throughout our state. So those are different areas that we're tracking and want to increase and improve on. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Ms. Charles. That was perfect. Commissioner Herkey.
I was just going to also indicate, Mr. Chair, that we've had the MACBL president, who's been on our governor's challenge, so been along with us the entire time. We've also offered training, and I think we're planning on doing some training here in the future that's directly related to the CDSOs to continue to keep their skills on the cutting edge and so forth. Not that it'll be part of their certification, but we think it's an important skill set that they need to have.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I don't see any questions, but I do know that when I was first made chair of this committee and everybody was made aware 3 years ago that suicide prevention and veterans homelessness were the two major things I wanted to work on for our veterans. And Commissioner, your agency has come through with flying colors on these both of these initiatives, and I appreciate it. So thank you for the presentation, and we'll keep up the good work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present today, and we'll give you an update on veterans homelessness here in the near future.
Sounds good, Commissioner. Thank you. Okay, next on the agenda is Commissioner Rosalind Robertson from the Department of Labor and Industry. Commissioner, welcome back to the committee. It's good to see you again. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Rosalind Robertson. I am the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. I was invited back here today to talk a little bit about what has transpired since the end of last session. And so I will mingle what actions we've taken, as I also seek to just provide some overall information to the committee about labor and industry. So to begin, I'd like to remind the committee that labor and industry mission is to ensure Minnesota's work and living environments are equitable, healthy, and safe. Our vision is to be a trusted resource and an impartial regulator for employers, employees, property owners, and other stakeholders. We accomplish our mission and our vision through our operating units, including workers' compensation, which ensures appropriate benefits are delivered to injured workers efficiently and at a reasonable cost. We work through our Minnesota OSHA program, which have both a compliance and a free consultation side, to help keep Minnesota workplaces safe and healthy. We also administer provisions in the labor standards area, which protect workers and promote compliance through enforcement and outreach about wages, hours, and employment laws. We administer the state apprenticeship program, which promotes and facilitates the development of quality registered apprenticeship programs that help employer recruit, train, and retain a highly skilled and diverse workforce in Minnesota. We do this by conducting compliance reviews to ensure the protection and advancement of apprentices training in their program. We're also charged with the administration of the Construction Code and Licensing Division. That division protects public health and safety through the enforcement of reasonable and uniform construction standards. We focus on improving efficiencies in the delivery of inspection, permitting, licensing, and other construction regulatory services to industry stakeholders. In addition to apprenticeship, we have two other workforce development programs, including the dual training pipeline. This program supports employers in building their own dual training program. It strategically combines related instructions with on-the-job training to ensure a skilled workforce. Currently, we target 4 high-growth industry sectors with limited experience with Minnesota Registered Apprenticeship Programs. We focus on advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, and information technology. And the third workforce development is the Youth Skill Training Program. This program supports the development of partnerships between education and employers to provide students 16 years and older with classroom instruction, safety training, and a paid work experience in high growth, high demand occupations. In this program, grant money is available to partners to create and implement youth skill training programs throughout the state. These locally developed programs are approved, supported, and monitored by labor and industry. And finally, of course, we have our general support function that supports our program areas, including communications, financial services, human resources, legal services, and research and statistics, and combative sports. Next. Labor and Industry's base budget is $234 million annually. And of this budget, only $9.76 million is general fund. General fund is limited to the labor standards unit. And this amount actually includes some IT modernization funds, which will end at the end of this fiscal year 23. The majority of our funding come from the Workers' Compensation Fund and the Construction Code Fund. Next. During legislative session 2021, the department received an appropriation of $1.8 million operating increase for Minnesota OSHA. And this has helped to ensure that OSHA can respond promptly to complaints, conduct inspections, and address workplace safety and health. With these funds, the agency have already hired 10 new staff, and which increased the overall FTEs by 6, because of course, anytime there is a hire, that creates somewhat of a domino effect within the unit. It is our plan to hire an additional 4 FTEs. We created an industrial hygiene unit and hired an industrial hygiene director. We did this to ensure adequate training of industrial health hygiene staff and allow for better decision-making of complex industrial hygiene cases. Next. We also had an initiative that came fairly late in the legislative process where we requested $1 million to set up a logger safety grant program. And this program was designed to provide matching funding up to $25,000 for logging industry employers to make safety improvements recommended by an on-site safety survey. I can tell you that this program was very well received by the logging industry. We modeled this program after an existing safety grant program. We were able to get the word out, do the outreach and education, and boy, did we receive interest and applicants for the program. Currently, all but less than $25,000 have been awarded, and the remaining amount is due to changes between what was envisioned and what actually occurred. We had only one grantee that returned any funds. Next. In the last session, Labor and Industry requested to increase the cap on the distribution of the Contractor Recovery Fund. This fund supports homeowners who used licensed contractors and the contractors did not live up to their agreement, causing an out-of-pocket loss to homeowners. Through the administrative process, homeowners can make application to the Contractor Recovery Fund to recover some or all of their loss due to a licensed contractor not performing up to their contractual obligations. We also increased the payout from once a year to twice a year to minimize the time it take to make homeowners whole. Next. During the 2019 legislature, $500,000 was designated to spend out of the Contractor Recovery Fund to create a statewide awareness campaign highlighting the importance of hiring licensed contractors and the consequences of hiring unlicensed contractor. The slide before talked about the Contractor Recovery Fund that pays out when individuals do utilize a licensed contractor. And we wanted to elevate that, particularly in throughout the entire state, but particularly in outstate Minnesota, to encourage Minnesota homeowners to utilize licensed contractors so that they do gain some degree of protection if things don't go as planned. Under this campaign, we contracted with the vendor and we have paid out more than $250,000 in the formal campaign. Additionally, we continue to promote the use of licensed contractors. Next. Next, we have the Construction Code Advisory Council. And this committee and other committees will hear me reference the Construction Code Advisory Council anytime there is interest in a question of the code or a request to change the code in any kind of way. This is the Construction Code Advisory Council is made up of 20 technical experts that brings to the table expertise in the majority of the areas that we have any regulatory authority over, including boilers. We have licensed architects and engineers, heating and ventilation, manufactured housing, residential building, commercial buildings. We have the state marshal, state fire marshal. We have the state building officials. We have a building accessibility expert, which was added during the last session, and an energy expert. We believe that by bringing concerns to this group, we have the best opportunity that technical experts from all areas of the code have an opportunity to weigh in on any proposal to ensure that a change in one area does not negatively impact a different area of the code. Next. the Construction Code Advisory Council utilize a technical advisory work groups to do these deep dives that are necessary when there are suggested changes to the code. Since last session, there have been three technical advisory groups that were formed, one to explore frost depths, one to look at window washing anchors, and I'd like to acknowledge Representative Detmer, who is on the committee who authored the window washing anchor bill, and he participated in the Construction Code Advisory Council, and I think we came up with some really good solutions. The third tag was on the building code, and there were a number of different bills throughout the last session that spoke to different areas of the code. Next. This slide represents the outcome of the technical advisory group. We looked at frost protection foundations in northern Minnesota. Representative Keeler brought to our attention that many of her constituents were at a disadvantage because the regulations in Minnesota were more stringent than the requirements in North Dakota, and that was increasing the cost to build a home, and some Minnesota residents were considering moving across the border because the actual cost, I believe, increased the cost about $3,000. Through our technical advisory group, we discovered through fully evaluating the frost protection, the entire issue, we learned that we actually did not have to change anything. Our existing code does in fact allow a shorter frost depth. And I'm sharing these details because it really speaks to the value of the Construction Code Advisory Council. The net result was we were able to address the concerns, identify yet another option that did not increase any cost, and it allows Minnesota residents to stay in Minnesota and not have to entertain, do they have to move across the border in order to afford new single family construction. We think this is a good process. And what we learned here was no legislation was needed in order to come up with this compromise. So we think the benefits of the Construction Code Advisory Council had really showed itself to be a valuable process through that exercise. Next. The 2021 legislative session also brought about changes that better support nursing and expecting parents. I'd like to thank Representative Kegel and Senator Coleman. We were able to improve upon the Women Economic Security Act. Effective January 1st, nursing parents can now take breaks to express milk at work without losing pay. Minnesota is the third state following Illinois and Georgia to require break time be paid, eliminating just one of the barriers that new parents face when returning to work after the birth of a child. The law also expands right to pregnant employees to request and receive additional accommodations in the workplace, such as more frequent food, restroom, or water breaks. It supports accommodations for seating and limits to heavy lifting. Previously, the law applied to employers with 21 or more employees. The current law now applies to employers with 15 or more employees. And under the new law, just by changing those numbers, it expands coverage to an additional 27,000 workers in childbearing age. And we think that's a good thing. It allows those workers to safely continue working and earning a paycheck when their family is growing. The legislature appropriated $84,000 in this fiscal year for outreach and education of employers and employees on the law changes and provided $34,000 in ongoing enforcement and compliance activity. The agency used this fund to build upon existing WESA outreach and educate employers and employees about the new law. Next. With the resources appropriated, labor and industry contracted with two organizations, the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition and the African American Babies Coalition, to assist the agency in disseminating information about the Women Economic Security Act. And both of these small contracts help the agency expand its reach to communities and networks with access to pregnant workers and new parents. The Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition developed and distributed a video and translated that video to Hmong, Spanish, and Somali. The video contains specific messaging about rights of pregnant and lactating workers. The African American Babies Coalition distributed information about WESA rights in their network and through social media and in-person events. In August, the Labor Standards Unit distributed a request for proposal to help the agency educate workers and employers about rights and responsibility under WESA. We received two proposals, which were to the same two organizations that we had previously contracted with. We distributed brochures. We distributed over 3,000 brochures in English, 1,500 brochures in Spanish, more than 800 brochures in Somali, and close to 350 brochures in Hmong. We've had a really robust outreach and education program to make both employers and employees aware of their rights and responsibilities under the WESA legislation. Next. Many of you have heard me talk about Campus, which is the updated technology system utilized in the Workers' Compensation Division. We are continuing to stabilize that new program. And as we work through our challenges, we are keeping the communications open with all of the users of the system. We frequently meet with affected groups. We have noticed all of our partners in the process, OEH and Workers' Work Comp Court of Appeals, to bring any concerns to us, and we try to provide support in real time. We've developed a help desk, which has been extremely helpful to stakeholders, where we can remove bottlenecks as quickly as possible, be it trouble signing on or trouble actually navigating through the program. Next. We want to talk a little bit about how labor and industry fared during COVID, and how, most importantly, how we served Minnesotans that rely on labor and industry. We provided and continue to provide information through webinars. We've conducted over 40 webinars regarding workers' rights, their responsibilities, who to call if they have problems, how to make a complaint, things of that nature. Labor and industry, like all other institutions, had to pivot very quickly, as evidenced by the virtual connection here today. And so currently we too operate in a hybrid environment. 28% of our staff telework full time. 68% of our staff work in a hybrid format, and only 4% of our staff work in the office or the field full time. We leveraged all available technology for the majority of the department's employees to successfully work remotely. We did begin to bring employees back into the office in June. However, before we could fully implement our return to the office, the Delta variant had started to pick up, and we aborted our commitment to bring in to increasing the minimum number of days that employees are required to be in the office. And we throttled back, and now we base employees' requirement to be in the office solely on the type of work that they do and whether or not they need to be either in our home office or an outstate office to conduct their work. During the interruption of COVID impacted lots of our work, and in one area in particular, we saw our construction code license examinations interrupted. And as soon as we could get back and renew our schedule, we were very deliberate and intentional by creating testing stations all around the state to address our backlog and get those professional examinations back on track as quickly as possible. The feedback from our stakeholders was extremely positive. At one point, we were leasing out space in other areas to conduct the exams. We now have begun to administer exams back at labor and industry. I often see the testers coming in, and they are all very appreciative to be able to be assured that they will be able to access the testing that they need. Other services that I'd like to highlight is that within the Minnesota OSHA program, we return to in-person handling of stakeholder inquiries. We've been very deliberate throughout this time to make certain that at the very least, we keep our customer service at the highest level because there are lots of folks out there that if you can't call the organization that you've already called, during COVID with so much uncertainty, it could have confounded the difficult time we were in. We've seen our phone calls increase exponentially. Our complaints, when I look at our agency productivity in almost all areas, we are back up to pre-COVID level in terms of our stakeholder engagements, the number of calls that we receive, the number of complaints that are being filed, and the numbers of requests for consultation through the voluntary arm of OSHA. In labor standards, in this unit is the unit that most often deal with employees who have workplace complaints, anything relating to workplace rules or concerns about pay. We have seen our numbers continue to increase. They actually increased more than 50%. And so we know that the service that we provide is extremely valuable, and we make every effort to be available, to be the voice on the end of the phone versus a voicemail.
Commissioner, we're at the end of our committee time, and we all have caucus at 4:45. So if you could wrap up, I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Chair Eklund, if I could just have maybe five more minutes to talk, or just a couple minutes to talk about the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. A bill was heard on Monday in this committee, and at that time, I asked for consideration to allow the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council to wrap up their work. The full council met on yesterday. The proposal regarding presumption and the agency cleanup request passed the council unanimously. With regards to presumption, the council agreed to reinstate, the council approved a proposal to reinstate the COVID presumption with an expiration date of January 13th, 2023. The purpose of the January 13th day is to ensure that if COVID is still with us at the end of the year, it would allow time for the legislature to reconvene and take any additional actions necessary to ensure that those that are impacted or contract COVID on the job would continue to receive some consideration. The rest of the work comp advisory proposal concerned itself with agency cleanup language, and in that there were no provisions that were considered controversial. And as I said, the proposal passed out of the council unanimously, and we would ask that the legislature accept the proposal as passed out of the council. With that ends my presentation. I know we're late on time, but if there are any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them now, or certainly you can always reach out to the agency and we'll provide you any feedback necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Commissioner. I'm sorry I had to rush you along, but sometimes when we have our Veterans Military Affairs stuff go first, we all get pretty excited about the programs they have going on too. So I don't see any question, any members' hands raised. Thank you for the explanation on the Worker Comp Advisory Council ruling. And members, believe me, if you have any questions, the Department of Labor and Industry, Commissioner Robertson's staff will get them to you as quickly as you need it. They're always, they always come through. Thank you, Commissioner and staff, for being here today with presentations. We have no other further questions. Our next hearing will be Tuesday, February 8th. Get ready, members. We're going to start hearing bills next week, and it's going to be fast and furious. So, with that, any member questions from me? I know we went over. I thank you for your patience, and not seeing any hands, we're adjourned.